Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this
movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
turn, I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, made me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, you not ready.
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years, they're prejudiced. Foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Of Your World News. Thank you for joining us on this May 1st in the year 2015. Once again, it's it seems like the last couple weeks we've had a focus on we found a way to put some of the shed some light on some very necessary light onto the issue of police brutality, police terror, police murder. In the United States, and looking at the impact that police brutality has had on black communities, and you know, to tell you with all due frankness and honesty, we unfortunately we could have a show every day of the year, and it would never get old, or it should never get old, because we still haven't reached that point in this country where we have this uniform, critical, sustained, and that's the key word, sustained and consistent attention on police brutality and the hyper-policing and the police state in the United States. We need to change. These systems have to be completely deconstructed to be reconstructed into something that is, dare I say, humane, because right now it's completely inhumane, I should say, when people are being slaughtered and killed with most of the time with virtual impunity. And we know it's today is May 1st, and we know this morning that the Baltimore State's attorney, she delivered issued the charges, against the barbaric police officers that savagely and brutally beat Brother Freddie Gray, who subsequently died as a result of the injury sustained by that brutal beating and being thrown into the back of a paddy wagon. And this is their story, saying they were culpable for not strapping him in, for not buckling him up in the back, and therefore the injuries that he sustained during that car ride ultimately killed him. That's the accurate story. I mean, for all we know, they may have beat him in the back of that paddy wagon or done something, thrown him down on his neck, on the back of his neck or something like that. So we should not forget that. But nonetheless, they have been charged, and I guess there have been arrest warrants issued for their arrest for the six officers that were involved in that. Second degree murder and manslaughter are amongst some of the charges. Those aren't all the charges, but those are amongst some of the charges that have been levied towards these police officers. And we're not out of the woods yet, because there still needs to be a trial, and we'll see what kind of verdict that trial renders. If it is anything less than guilty verdicts that carry with them lengthy prison sentences, then I would say that justice is not even close to being served. So we'll have to continue to keep an eye and a vigilant eye and on how this trial progresses and to see what happens. But in the meantime, we still have a lot of work to be done. There are a lot of potential lives out there that we need to do everything we can to make sure that there are no more Freddie Grays, there are no more Ayanna Stanley Joneses, and not from the standpoint of the beautiful people that these individuals were, the human lives that they represented that were brutally ripped away from this earth, but from the standpoint that we don't want to see things happen to other people that happened to those people, and the countless others that I could name, that the guests on this show could name, to make sure that these kind of incidents, these kind of injustices are halted as soon as possible, as soon as possible. But that the onus is on us. We cannot let up. We cannot let up the way we did with Trayvon Martin. We cannot let up the way we did with Amadou Diallo and so many others. It has to be sustained. It has to be sustained in perpetuity. In perpetuity. Even if there's a year without any kind of police brutality that is levied upon anybody, we have to continue to make sure that it doesn't rear its that it's buried far underneath the earth with the devil, and it never it rears its ugly head again. We have to continue to be reminded and remind culture, the culture within the United States, as well as future generations, what injustice looks like, and especially when it's wearing a badge and a blue suit, to make sure that it never, ever happens again. And so with that being said, let's get the show started. Once again, joined by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, count them, student activists, journalists, human beings that are interested in the lives of other human beings and making sure that these justices injustices are ceased. And so we'll start with Christine Hagen, who is right in front of me. And I want to also mention some of these students, this is really important, have been raising resources to bring to not just activists and protesters in Baltimore, but also raising resources such as food items, and the like, water, bring those to churches that are then going to be distributed to children from impoverished communities and households within Baltimore. And as we know, when the schools were shut down, there's such high poverty in some of these areas that some students, when they go to school, the only square meal that they get during a day is the square meal that they're given for lunchtime at school. So, I commend these college students and so many other college students and activists who have really pitched in literally. So start with Christine. And Christine, let us know how you feel.
Hi, I'm Christine. I'm a freshman here at the University of Maryland. I'm a government major. And just before I talk about how I feel about the food drop, we're still taking stuff, so if anybody wants to help us out, that would be nice.
How can they, if they want to help out, what's your contact that you feel comfortable giving out?
They should reach out to us through Twitter, at UMDSLAP or Plumas. Jesse, what's the Plumas Twitter?
It's Plumas at UMD.
So if you want to help us out getting food to the people in Baltimore, that would be very much appreciated. I don't know. I just feel like this is a conversation that keeps getting had, and it's just another person gets, brutalized by the police, and it's another hashtag. And I feel as though, Solomon already touched on this, but it's so reactionary, where someone gets hurt, and then we all have to go out, this should be something that we have to stay on this. This can't be a flare-up and then, this decision comes down and we're all like, okay, we got justice. Because it's not just about Freddie Gray. It's about all of us. So it's not like, oh, I just want prosecution for what happened to Freddie Gray. I don't just want those officers charged and found guilty. That's not all I want. I want the system to be changed so that this doesn't keep happening. Because I'm not going to come out, and I see some of y'all are kind of nodding with me. I'm not going to come out every time and have to protest, we want this particular case taken care of. That's ridiculous. So what the focus needs to be on is, why is the system like this? Why are police policing police so that they are kind of free to do whatever, and then we also come for them after the fact? So that's my thing. I don't want it after the fact. I want it before. We need to be fixing the system now, not just calling for these six officers charged.
I so agree. And my name is Nancy. I'm senior at the University of Maryland. And I was just, I was having this idea of, so how do we go about bringing this topic of police brutality and the prison industrial complex to a national platform? Because we're 1 year away from elections, and the politicians' response to these things haven't really been. A lot of them have been quiet. A lot of them haven't really, President Obama calling the rioters thugs and stuff like that. So how do we go about for people to, this is something that's important to the Black community. How do we go about telling them, hey, we want you to address this. We want things to change, So I think that's the conversation that needs to happen.
Yeah, and that's a topic that we were all sitting in here kind of talking about the other day, just with how the Black vote is so guaranteed for Democrats that Republicans don't waste their time talking to us because they know we're not going to vote for them. And Democrats don't waste their time trying to give us what we need because it's they're guaranteed. We don't have to worry about it. They're for sure going to come out for us. And so both sides are ignoring us in the same way. So it kind of needs to be politically, we can't be guaranteed. I feel like we can't be – Black people need to be a swing vote, and we need to vote for the person and not get stuck with, oh, I vote for this party all the time. I'm always with this party, because neither one of them is really giving results on this. I want someone to come out and speak on this strongly, Anybody? That's how I feel.
Just look at Obama. I mean, he was in office for 8 years, and – We're also lucky. We have a black man and a president of the most powerful country, you know, from Africa, everywhere. People are rooting for Obama. And he just, like, what has he done for the black community? I don't know. Can somebody tell me what he has done? Because I don't know anything that Obama has done. And we're still rooting for him. We're like, he's applauded by the media. And, I mean, in certain ways, it might just be as bad as Bush, you know. And we're not saying that. I think we have to look past, we have to look past gender, we have to look past skin color and really see who is there for us. If it's a white man who is there for us and he knows the things, okay, let's vote for a white man. If it's a Hispanic man, okay, let's vote for someone who's Hispanic. Let's stop looking at race. Let's stop looking at, I don't know, I like this person because he seems interesting or cool. Let's stop looking at that.
No, I just want to chime in. Like, you know, you bring up a really, really good point. That when it comes to politics in this country, you know, if you're voting based on someone's gender, you know, you simply, I'm going to vote for this woman because I want to see the first woman president of the United States, or I want to see the first black president, you're a part of the problem, and you need to get some serious political education about where you live and, you know, the social constructs that is United States of America. You are a complete part of the problem, and feel free to chime in if you disagree otherwise. The number is 347-945-5191. But if it's Hillary Clinton or if it's, you know, Barack Obama, and they're bombing people or supporting, you know, the same murderous, you know, imperialist wars that their predecessors were, what the hell does it matter what their gender is? What does it matter what the skin color is? What the hell? What does it matter? Oh, wow, does it make it easier that the person that's carrying out drone attacks looks like you if you're brown? Does that matter? Does that make a difference? Does that make a difference? Now, if it does, and then, dare I say, you live in some kind of warped reality, and you unequivocally are part of the problem, and you're just, you know, you're just doing things because it's trendy. It's trendy. You know, you're the person that's looking quickly to go find, you know, the next T-shirt to, you know, to profit off of, you know, because I see everybody else wearing Freddie Gray T-shirts, so I'm going to wear it. Not because I'm really in solidarity, but just because I want to wear it because everybody else is, and it's a cool thing to do. It was a cool thing to vote for Obama a second time after everybody, and I didn't vote for him not one time. I don't want to put that out there. I don't want that. But even after, if you voted for the first time, you know, fine, you might have been duped. But voting for him the second time, despite his record, killing more people and executing more drone attacks in his first year in office than Bush did in 8 years. And you're going to try to talk to me about Bush and what he did? Get the hell out. I don't want to have that conversation. I don't want to have that conversation. Then that means that don't accuse Bush of anything then. If you're going to let Obama off the hook, don't accuse him of anything. And so you're exactly right. When it comes to the so-called electoral process and voting in this country, as you said, if Jesse Jimenez, who's right here, if he's running and he's a Latino male, and I'm not, but his broad-based, you know, platform is geared towards, you know, allowing my community to have a strong sense of self-determination, and because if you have police brutality in your community, if you have structural racism, you have no self-determination. So if Jesse Jimenez and his platform, whether he's blue, green, or what have you, or brown, then that's who I'm riding for, because I'm riding for somebody. I'm gonna support somebody who ultimately their politics, if they're brought to power, can help bring about liberation for my community that's been catching hell for 400 plus years. And the same thing should go for you as a woman. If there's a man that comes in that has, you know, much better broad-based politics, you know, geared towards, you know, the liberation of women from the oppressive, you know, atmosphere of a male supremacist society, then you vote for him rather than Hillary Clinton, the warmonger that she not will be, but that she was as Secretary of State. Jesse, you had something to say. Canada, Jesse, I think I've just anointed you.
So I just want to chime in. Oh, my name is Jesse Jimenez. I'm a junior at the University of Maryland. I'm also the Vice President for PLUMAS, which stands for Political Latinx United for Movement and Action in Society. I just want to point out an article that was brought to my attention early this morning. It emphasizes how the marginalized and oppressed communities are voiceless in the United States. So the title of this is The Man Who Foresaw Baltimore. The caption reads, nearly 40 years ago, the Kerner Commission warned us all of this. We didn't listen. This Politico.com, Political. I'm going to read like the first two paragraphs. It reads, in 1967, the National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders reviewed the events of the previous summer. Detroit, Newark, and over a dozen other cities have struggled with intense episodes of violence and disorder. The disturbances were typically sparked by interactions with police. They began in African-American inner-city neighborhoods, and young black men were often in the forefront of the confrontations with police and National Guardsmen. Analyzing these events, the Kerner Commission, named for its chair, Illinois Governor Otto Kerner, concluded, our nation is moving towards two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal. A solution will require a commitment to national action, compassionate, massive, and sustained. From every American, it will require new attitudes, new understanding, and above all, new will. Over the next four decades, Kerner's bold language was ignored. So that's all I'm going to read, but I think they meant well with this article, but what really angered me when I read it was, first of all, in 1967, the people in power, you know, the white supremacists or white people in general, they thought it was necessary to come up with a National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders just to review why poor black people or poor minorities in general, why are they rioting, when instead, you know, they're telling you why they're rioting. They want civil rights, they want equality, they're tired of being beat by police every day, they're tired of their kids starving, they're tired of these terrible school systems, but yet you're not listening to them. You come up with the whole advisory board, which is completely unnecessary. They're telling you why they're rioting, but you don't want to listen. So you come up with this advisory board they're probably saying, oh, why are these savages acting this way? Let's put our brains together so we can find out, instead of just listening to the oppressed. And now this article is talking about how this man, Otto Kerner, he predicted what was going to happen in Baltimore. As if, you know, it didn't take a genius to find out this was going to happen. It didn't take for Illinois Governor Otto Kerner to say, you know, if you keep them trapped in poverty, if you keep brutalizing them with these racist police, then they're going to end up, you know, becoming violent. They're going to end up fighting back. So this article just illustrates how much people of color are voiceless in the United States, and how either wealthy white people are blinded by their privilege, or they just don't want to listen to us. So I just want to, I guess, speak a little bit on this article that I read.
Anyone else? I just want to throw this out. What do you guys think about the language that's been used throughout the week? So, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned, like, the use of thugs that Obama said, but, you know, obviously he wasn't the only one. You know, you look at Governor Hogan, who it's just interesting, you know, and I'm just going to put it out there, you know, yeah, it has, there has to do a lot with race, because, you know, the white media, I mean, they were incensed when those inanimate objects were being upended and being destroyed. They were incensed. Governor Hogan was incensed. Okay, and we might have a discussion. We could, you know, about his conversation rather than a debate if all things were equal, but they weren't equal, because Governor Hogan, you know, referred to, you know, the folks in the streets as thugs, as lawless, and he also said it was unacceptable. Now Governor Hogan never said that when it was caught on camera. All right. When you saw Freddie Gray and his, you know, his, you know, waist down, you know, limp body being dragged into that paddy wagon, screaming, and, you know, and hearing those screams of pain, and that, and, you know, he saw it, you know, half the world saw it, and not once did he say that they were thugs or lawless, you know, and that was unacceptable. Never have I heard him say that that kind of policing is or was unacceptable. Not once did he say that. And these people out in Baltimore, they didn't even kill nobody. They didn't kill nobody. Okay? But it's clear when it comes to it, and I will turn it over to you guys, but it's clear, this is, once again, this shows you how culturally racist this country is. The fabric of this country is thick and stained and tainted with the funk of institutional racism through and through. Not just institutional racism, but overt racism from whites that just could not give a damn about black life whatsoever. They, you know, so they come up with every excuse. Oh, look at that, you know, they were waiting for a reason to speak out on their, you know, on all the racist thoughts that they had. I mean, just all you gotta do is think back several years to when Mike Vick was going through that trial for having dogfights fought in his house, right? They were fought in his house, and I'm a dog lover myself, but they were out in Atlanta at that court. And they had signs. They had the little. I remember I saw little white kids, like 4 and 5 years old, and the parents gave them the little placards to hold, and it said, "Vic is sick. Vic is sick. He need, you know, send Mike Vick to jail." And they were outside, protesting. And what the crazy thing is, you know, before that, years before that, like I mean, and even after that, you know. Whenever there's been a black man being killed, whether it was Amadou Diallo or whether it was let's just say Oscar Grant, around the same time when he was shot in the back on camera, you didn't see no white people get in front of, and you don't ever see a whole bunch of white people on their own going in front of the police department or the state house with signs, you know, racist cops gotta go. Yeah, and I'm not talking about the white folks that are here and there that are joining with black activists. I'm talking about white folks in mass, like you saw in Atlanta, in mass, wanting Vic to be put on a stake, you know what I'm saying, a tarred and feathered. You know, so it just shows you, you know, the inanimate objects and dogs' lives far, far outweigh in their mind, in their mentality, and also the way we're treated far outweigh the lives of people of color in this country, and that's got to change. But it's not going to come by way of our oppressors. It's not going to come by way of the oppressors, any shape, form, or fashion. It's only going to come by way of us organizing on a consistent basis, year in and year out, not week in and week out, but year in and year out. Christine, it looks like you have something to say.
I mean, I just feel like when we're talking about the language, like, how does everyone not understand that using the word thug, calling people thug, it's code. Like, we all know what they really want to say. It's just that somebody said this to me, and I forget their name. I wish that I could, like, quote them on this. But somebody said, like, we're going to move from one politically incorrect term to the next, you know? And I just, I don't even know how to, like put it into words. But I just, it's so clear. So to not see it, to not realize, like, how insulting this is or how, you know, we're being called out of our name like that.
Yeah, we had this really great town hall meeting that we kind of touched on a lot of stuff that Solana was just talking about. And, you know, I think one of the professors, the panel member, was saying that thugs is just a euphemism for, you know, nigger. It's just a way of saying nigger. And I remember last year when Ferguson was happening, and I think somebody asked Hogan, I keep calling him Logan, somebody asked Hogan to comment on what was happening in Ferguson, and he was like, oh, Ferguson is not Baltimore, so I don't have to talk about this. And when Baltimore happened, he didn't say anything concerning the murder of Freddie Gay, nothing at all. But as soon as the rioting started, he declared a state of emergency and called in the National Guard. It is so obvious on what side he is. He just makes it so obvious that he doesn't give a shit. He doesn't give any shit about Baltimore or people of color. He doesn't. And, you know, I accidentally get updates on his Facebook, and he's like, I visited the cops who were injured and stuff, and he's not out there in the community. He's not trying to, you know, to call for peace or actually going out there and seeing what this community needs. He doesn't care. He doesn't care.
And I feel like when we're talking about the language, though, it's not what one white person thinks about me. If you think I'm the N-word, if you think I'm a thug,
mm-hmm.
that's right. His prerogative, his or her prerogative. My concern isn't, oh, white people are calling me out of my name. My concern is white people have the freedom to really mess me up and get away with it.
Right.
So I'm not concerned with what they're calling me. I'm concerned with the freedom with which they can use this word, and there's no repercussions, because we see that freedom with which they use these words is translated into the freedom with which they will shoot you in the back and they will shoot you on camera, and the autopsy will say this is a homicide, and we'll all sit back and be like, I wonder if they're going to be indicted. I wonder if they're going to be charged.
Right.
That's my concern more than the language.
And it's also like the president and the mayor, they are both black, and they know what the word means when they're calling like another person, another black person a thug. They know that it means the N-word. So if the president is saying it, and then that's probably why the mayor or the Governor Hogan thought he could say it, because it was like, oh, well, the president says called you a thug, so I can call you a thug. So like, if you're a black person, you should not be trying to put down people. Like, it doesn't make any sense why the president or the mayor could think that it was, like, acceptable to say these thugs when it's like, these are your people.
I think that's a good point you bring up, and I think it alludes itself to the point that Christine and Nancy brought up, and what we were discussing, I guess, yesterday and I think maybe even last week, looking at the whole paradigm of the two-party dictatorship, the Democrat and Republican, those black folks that are card-carrying, you know, Democrats that are, you know, elected to office, not all, because we've had some really, really strong ones, and the strong ones actually summarily have been kicked out of the party, the Cynthia McKinney's and the Hilliard, you know, Congressman Hilliard, you know, who would speak out. Those folks that are proud Democrats, their first thing is to curry favor with white liberals. It's not to to try to raise as much money from those white liberals as possible. So it gets at the root cause that as long as we are beholden to the Democratic Party, or you know, either two of those corporate parties, We are going to routinely continue to find our interests as people of color, whether you're black or you're indigenous, brown, Latino, we are going to continue to find our interests buried at the bottom of their platforms, or buried at the bottom of whatever stacks of paper are on their desk, you know, on Capitol Hill. That's who they are, you know what I'm saying, and that's what they do. All right, and so you know, it should be no surprise that Obama continues to curry favor with white liberals, you know, day in and day out, week in, week out. I mean, his legacy. I mean, this is a man, for God's sake, that extolled Ronald Reagan as if he was some kind of saint. I mean, and he lived through the Reagan presidency, lived through the fact that Ronald Reagan called you black women, you know, in Chicago, called them welfare queens, and referred to black men when he was on the campaign stump in Denver, Colorado, in the early 80s when he was running, referred to black men as bucks. There's no bucks, and bucks is an old slave term that referred to, you know, black men that they would, you know, strip naked and put oil all over and put them on the auction block. You know, I got this buck here, man, for $150, a good buck. You could mate him with your slaves, you know, your slave women, and they wouldn't say slave women, but your slave bitches, whatever, you know, and so forth. So for him to extol someone like Reagan, who also was a war criminal, and all the other stuff that he did, invading Grenada, and what he did in Central America that impacted your country, you know, Jesse, El Salvador, you know, tells you all you need to tell, you know, all you need to know. So we really need to get out of this rut, this quagmire, because as long as we're stuck in the Democratic Party and voting simply because folks are Democrats, we are going to continue to be disappointed year in, year out, and then the next generation, when they inherit this, we need to look ourselves in the mirror, and we will be to blame.
Hi, my name's Maymuna. I just want to go back to what you said about the governor not taking any action or speaking up until it got violent. And I feel like that's a huge problem, because there have been a lot of people not saying anything about the protest, not saying anything about Freddie Gray, and then as soon as it turns violent, you want to have an opinion all of a sudden saying they're rioting, they're looting, they're doing all these bad things when you see public property being destroyed. But when you saw a life being taken, you didn't have this big of a problem. But when you have your monetary interest being threatened, now it's a problem. You see CVS is being burned, and you care so much. And, like, I think for a lot of people, it's not your place to sit here and say they shouldn't be violent, they shouldn't be looting. You've never been in that situation. You've never lived in those conditions. You don't know how hopeless they feel or what has driven them. You don't know the things that they've done before resorting to that to lead them to feel like that was their only option. And I think that's a huge problem because you basically cannot speak on a situation that you know nothing about. And until you do that research, until you look into it and see what's really wrong with the system, you can't speak on it.
I think we need a little, just, you know, for on the other side of the break, we'll continue this conversation, but I think it's time to be reminded that, you know, because oftentimes our elders that made their transition to the ancestors before we were even born, including myself, have for a long time, you know, warned us about these things. I mean, Malcolm X and Martin Luther King warned us about the white liberals within the Democratic Party, you know, referred to them as wolves in sheep's clothing or foxes in sheep's clothing. You know, Malcolm said, we know about the Republican Party, but a lot of us don't know about the Democratic Party because, you know, they come around, and we continue to be political chumps. Call us chumps. You know, you're nothing but a chump. You know, Democrats, you know, that they dupe you time and time again. So, just want to hear what Malcolm has to say about democracy in America. That you know, this is the matter of fact. You know what? No. Let's hear what he has to say about the American dream. I don't think he called it a dream. I think he called it a nightmare.
Being here in America doesn't make you an American. Being born here in America doesn't make you an American. Why, if birth made you American, you wouldn't need any legislation. You wouldn't need any amendments to the Constitution. No, I'm not an American. I'm one of the 22 million black people who are the victims of Americanism. One of the 22 million black people who are the victims of democracy. Nothing but disguised hypocrisy. And I see America through the eyes of a victim. I don't see any American dream. I see an American nightmare.
Supposed to be off the street by 9 o'clock. If we shoot, we're going to shoot to kill.
There's been a lot of talk said recently because I was supposed to have said something about Negroes should buy rifles. White people have been buying rifles all their life. No commotion.
Shut it off and get out of that car with your hand up. All of you, the one in the back seat, too.
Come on, get up.
Get your hands up, I said. Drop that purse and get your hands up.
You can lift them higher than that for him. Let's get them up there. First one drops their hands, is dead, man.
Fighting in Vietnam. Come home and look what happened to me. You move up.
We are peaceful people. We are loving people. We love everybody who loves us. But we don't love anybody who doesn't love us. We're nonviolent with people who are nonviolent with us. But we are not nonviolent with anyone who is violent with us.
Here he is standing up in front of other people, Uncle Sam, with the blood of your and my mothers and fathers on his hands, with the blood dripping down his jaws like a bloody jawed wolf. No, no more days like those.
I pray that God will bless you in everything that you do. I pray that you will grow intellectually so that you can understand the problems of the world and where you fit into in that world picture. And I pray that all the fear that has ever been in your heart will be taken out. And when you look at that man, if you know he's nothing but a coward, you won't fear him. If he wasn't a coward, he wouldn't gang up on you. This is how they function. They function in mobs. That's a coward. They put on a sheet so you won't know who they are. That's a coward. No. The time will come when that sheet will be ripped off. If the federal government doesn't take it off, we'll take it off.
Thank you. And before I get your reactions, I was just thinking when Malcolm was talking, is that I think sometimes we forget that most, not all, because we've had some of our heroes and sheroes that were, you know, what you call politicians, but the vast majority of people that we extol, you know, Malcolm X's, Frederick Douglass's, the Ella Bakers, you know, Ida B. Wells's, you know, Harriet Tubman's, the vast majority of the people that we extol were not your classic politicians. They were community organizers, or in the case of Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman, they were abolitionists and, you know, freedom fighters, if you will. But they weren't politicians. So why do we cling so much to this whole notion of, like, politician? Like, oh, I want to see the first black face in the White House. You know, I got to vote for this guy, Barack Obama, a second time because this makes me feel so good. When people that have been like him and have had that kind of classic, you know, politician, you know, war paint on, have never been the ones that have really done the most for our community generationally and so forth. Like, what is this new age? Like, I just don't get it. Maybe, you know, sometimes we just don't reflect enough on that. But, you know, Malcolm was the furthest thing from a politician. Same thing with King and Ella Baker. I mean, there's just so many, you know.
I have a quote from a philosophy discussion that we just did relating to what he said about we'll be nonviolent with people who are nonviolent with us.
Oh, Malcolm. Okay.
Yeah. And it goes, when nonviolence begins halfway through the war with the aggressor calling time out, it exposes itself as a ruse. So basically, I interpreted the quote as saying, how is it that you have a violent action and you're expecting people to respond with nonviolence, or you're condemning violence now, but you hadn't condemned it before?
And we forget that we like to portray ourselves as a peaceful nation, and maybe we were at one point in time.
Who's we? Who's we? When we speak about language, you know, as I look at you, you know. Your brown skin, you had nothing. You and folks that like you had nothing to do with that decision-making process.
Yeah, I mean, as Americans, you know, we were all, like, we were against the Vietnam War. We were kind of regretting Iraq, and we don't want to be in this war. But our government, and most often, we're built on this notion of rebellion and rioting. Just think about the Boston Tea Party. We destroy property because of higher taxes. And people are destroying, you know, windows and things because of oppression, you know. So it's really hypocritical to call out people who are oppressed, who say, we're rioting, we're doing the same thing, because this is an American thing, rioting and protesting. This is our legacy. And to say that we're not a violent country is absolutely not true.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, too. The United States is probably one of the most violent empires that have ever existed during human time. Almost pretty much everything that the United States has achieved came through violence. The Revolutionary War started, the Boston Tea Party helped spark that, and that was a riot. We went to, you know, World War One, World War Two. We bombed, like, the hell out of innocent people in Japan.
And I want to also I'm just going to stop you just for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
We got to think about also the use of that pronoun we. That we.
Yeah. Yeah.
They. The U.S. government bombed the hell out of those countries.
Right. So, and not only that, and then, you know, the United States have been going into different countries assassinating people, like, I always forget his name. Congo.
Patrice Lumumba.
Yeah. And then also in Central America, funding military death squads so they could, make sure their interests are well kept. So, like you said, it's very hypocritical when they could look at the people rioting in Baltimore and be like, oh, look at these savages, look at these animals over
right
here. When they're rioting over decades of oppression, not even decades, centuries by now. and then they're rioting, they're angry over lives. Freddie Gray was killed, mm-hmm. and he's not the first person that was killed by Baltimore police. Yeah. The United States has a history of killing people over money, over oil, over greed, over resources, not even for lives. So yeah, it's definitely hypocritical.
I was just thinking about the way we look at violence and the way we respond to it. Like, a couple weeks ago in my policing class. My policing class.
Policing class?
Yes.
CPJS
340.
Oh, okay.
It's literally titled policing. And one of the things that we talked about was how apparently one of the things that they teach police is, like, they have this idea that certain people respond best to violence. Which I honestly don't.
That was in the class?
Yes. Like, we took notes on that. Like, they think that people respond best to violence, and that's why they get violent. Well, if our entire country was built on the foundation of violence, don't you think we respond best to violence? So how are you going to look at these rioters and say, oh, they're animals, they're savages? You weren't looking at the cops who severed 80% of Freddie Gray's spine as savages. You weren't saying that they were wrong for anything that they did, but, as soon as the CVS gets burned down, oh, God, somebody stole toilet paper. They stole baby formula. They're savages. No, they're trying to feed their family.
Just to add one more thing to that, it frustrates me when I see people saying, you know, we got to keep things nonviolent, keep the peace. Those same people aren't advocating for peace when Obama is droning, you know, other countries, killing innocent people. They weren't advocating for peace when police are, like, choking out Gardner on camera. They're not advocating for peace. When people are constantly getting killed by the police, all of a sudden when you know, like you said, when a CVS is destroyed, all of a sudden, you know, oh, man, we got to keep the peace, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, just a long video I saw on Facebook by this woman called Shadi Harimi, and this is about when she was in Egypt. When I was in Egypt, there was no limit to the number of Americans. The number of Americans who wanted to know how the youth helped lead a revolution. No questions about buildings and cars set on fire, rocks thrown, the streets broken into chunks of concrete. I was asked about the tear gas shot and the bullets fired. I was asked why an uprising. I said, bread, freedom, social justice. That was the call. Mm-hmm. The government stole money and the right to vote. The police beat, tortured, and killed them. The school failed them. There was no job, no opportunities, no future. It wasn't their country. America's heads were not in agreement, understanding. Now we have Ferguson, Baltimore. We have black American youth and the same underlying issues. Why is it so hard to understand now here? And this woman, mm-hmm. her name is Shadi Harimi, and I mean, this is basically it. We understand when it's other people, and maybe it's the media, maybe it's because we refuse to look at ourselves deep down and say, hey, we're not all that good, but that's okay, like, we need healing, we need to be better, we can be better. Or maybe it's all about the fact that we're a capitalist society, and we need to keep people down in order to make a profit.
I think it's definitely, like, a huge part of it is the media, because, for example, with these riots. You have, like, people rioting because of football games. That doesn't make CNN. They don't talk about that and refer to them as savages. You're drunk and you're jumping on cars and throwing things because you're celebrating or you're angry about a football team winning or losing, and that doesn't get that much coverage. But when you have something that's for an actual cause, it's, like, being painted in such a negative light. And with the whole thing that you were talking about, us looking at other countries, it's funny to me because people are so quick to judge other countries and the way they do the things they do instead of focusing on their own country and look at what your government is doing. You know, you're so quick to say, look at this regime, right. they're oppressing their people. You don't feel oppressed? You don't know what's going on in your own country. That is a type of oppression.
You don't even understand that you yourself are oppressed.
Yeah.
And I think, I think when we talk about it, like, we all seem to be in agreement in this room, like, this is what our government is doing, this is what our politicians are doing, like, none of us are in disagreement. But, like, to bring that back to the question that Solomon asked in the beginning, so then why is it that we still get so excited when they put when a brown face starts saying white words and is elected into office?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel like even though we understand that we're being oppressed, there's this level of, like, when a black person is elected or when a Latino person is elected, it's like, okay, well, now we've been accepted by white culture. Now we're in it. It's like we want not so much I feel when people get excited about these things, it's because they don't so much want the system to get changed. It's that they want want a higher place in the system, or they want to be more accepted by the system. Mm-hmm. So, the disagreement isn't over, are these politicians bad? But it's we have to look at it we can't be here just to take care of ourselves or to just get your higher spot. Mm-hmm. It's got to be, why is this allowed to happen in the first place, you know?
And Jesse can probably talk about this, because I know that when Marco Rubio announced his candidacy, I thought, oh, maybe the Latino community would be excited about this. And he can talk about how they responded to that.
Well, I could say most of the Latino community is not from Marco Rubio. But there's definitely, a portion of the population that is excited about it for exactly what you mentioned, Christine, about wanting some type of higher place in America, which disgusts me, and it's nothing new. I think back in the 1920s, 1930s, there actually used to be Mexican Americans who would go to court and try to argue for their own whiteness, try to argue that they were white and that they weren't black. And that was to distance themselves from blacks and to try to gain some type of white privilege. And that's still prevalent in the Latino community, which is one of the things that I hate the most. I see a lot of Latinos down talking on the protesters, for all kinds of reasons. And the way I see it is just their type of way of trying to distance themselves from that and try to earn themselves some sort of leverage by saying, oh, I'm nothing like those people in Baltimore. I'm nothing like them. I'm actually civilized, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. They try to gain some sort of leverage. And I mean, that's what the oppressor wants to see. They want to divide us. They Dr. Solomon says all the time, they laugh at us when we fight over these little crumbs that they give us, when we should be uniting together and get everything that we deserve, everything that's ours. And I just wanted to touch upon a little bit more on the media. The media makes it seem as if there haven't been demonstrations in Baltimore year-round for the longest.
Right.
They've been protesting for pretty much very consistently for a very long time. And it was always peaceful. It was non-violent. I think they have Tyrone West Wednesdays in Baltimore. They've been having that for the longest. Tyrone West was another man that was killed by Baltimore police. But CNN and Fox News never captured that. They never came to Baltimore to capture those peaceful protests. But as soon as people start breaking stuff, as soon as there's riots and fires and stuff, that's when they rush into the city. And they're like, oh, let's catch these people of color acting a fool so we could broadcast it to America, and they could point at us and be like, yeah, look at those thugs. That's what happens when we let them get out of control. So that's just the power that the media has. And unfortunately, most of America is very much uninformed, and they believe everything that the Fox News and CNN tell them.
And we also support that media so much, and maybe not you guys in this office, but this, because I see all of you as part of the solution. You're creating an alternative, because right now with social media and with camera phones and all the different things that are free capabilities. That, and I'm not talking about people that don't know. I've seen people create all these little different short video montages that are just based on ratchetness that they post on Facebook. And social media, but what it shows me is that, damn, outside of the content, I mean, video production with these just using basic means to put it together, using camera phones and those kind of things to post daily messages or something like that. They're like, oh yeah, I'm here at McDonald's eating while they're eating that poison food, but the point is that they're posting all kinds of videos and things, of themselves on social media. But it shows that they have the capability to be independent journalists. So you guys are a part of it right now. For the last few weeks, have been creating your own media, creating an alternative, no, we may not have the reach that CNN or Fox or MSNBC in terms of the you know, tens of millions of viewers they have, simply because they have the money to be in every market and to have, you know, these strong towers and so forth. But we've seen people get millions and millions and millions of views on YouTube that were just ordinary folks, just regular ordinary folks, did, you know, little videos. So I think that we, you know, we and especially young folks, like college age students, and even maybe even younger, really have to, like, really start to, and it's going to take us to inspire them to do it, to teach them to say, listen, this is why it's necessary, this is why it's important. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't do fun stuff, whatever, but what if once in a while, like once a week, you and your friends put together some kind of short video on what's going on in the community, you know, short 10-15 minute piece, and you'll all be involved. You can, you know, somebody can do can narrate it. Someone could be the reporter, and just dress up as like a fun thing to really inspire young people to be independent grassroots journalists, because we have to start looking at these things now as our alternatives to the media, because as I said, the revolution is not going to be televised, and I'll put a comma to it, it's not going to be televised by the oppressor, but it can be televised by us in a grassroots manner by using, you know, social media and all these different little tiny gadgets that we oftentimes overlook that can be used as that. But as long as we're doing that, we're just kind of just marching continuously up a hill, and not making any traction. We gotta continue to do these kind of things, and that's why we always tell folks, like, listen, you know, your world news is your platform as well, all right? You always have free reign to call in and to contribute and tell us, like, what. I mean, I'll never forget that show that we did, you know, more than a year ago, where we had, you know, 10,000 folks from all over that not called in at one time, but were engaged, and we had probably had 20 or 30 people call in that day with stories and testimonials of police brutality and mass incarceration. You know, we got to continue that movement, create them and build them. Jesse and everybody, you said, Jesse, you're frustrated. What do we do with this, with that frustration? How do we use that frustration as something that's impactful and effective? And maybe this is what you do. This is part of it. Going to Baltimore this morning, like Christine and so many others did this morning, and as well as did a couple days ago. Maybe that is part of it. But how do we channel, like, funnel this frustration, this anger, this righteous indignation, funnel this righteous indignation into work for our communities, work for the people?
Well, first of all, it takes I think it's called boots on the ground advocacy, which means we actually have to go into our communities or the communities that are in need. We actually have to be in there, get to know the people, learn for ourselves, because, well, I'm speaking from the perspective of the average college student, because us college students, you know, we are privileged. Even though a lot of us that don't come from privileged backgrounds, just us making it to college, we're now at a privileged standpoint, but, you know, we have to keep coming back to our communities. We have to keep working within our communities and community organizers that are in there every day. And once we start doing that, we can start educating other people about the realities of these marginalized communities. For example, if I go to, let's say if I went to Baltimore and I talked to the community organizers over there who are currently working with other UMD students, you know, I'll learn more about what's going on in Baltimore. I'll learn more about what that community needs, and then I could come back to the University of Maryland, come back to these other advocates here on campus and tell them what's going on, so they know, you know, the truth of or the realities instead of what's being portrayed on mainstream media. Mm-hmm. On top of that, we have to be consistent. Unfortunately, the only thing that's consistent right now is police murders. I feel like it's every week there's somebody new that. Somebody unarmed that actually happens every day, but what I mean is when it grabs, like, nationwide media attention, there's always somebody new that got killed by a police officer. So while they're consistent with that, we need to be consistent with what we do. We can't just, you know, be extremely active, let's say in Baltimore, just for, I guess, a month and then just forget about it and go back to our regular lives. We need to stay in those communities because I think another thing that's harmful is, I guess what you would call high turnover rates, people who go into a community, work for a little bit, but then leave and never come back. We need to start, you know, staying in those communities, build relationships, become a mentor for I guess, kids around there, and actually give an actual commitment. So I guess consistency in being in the community, coming back and educating people, I think that those are the three main keys.
Yeah, which you've been a part of, right? You and some of your comrades have gone to middle schools and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Anybody else? Like, what are some things that can be done on an immediate level, and what's the uphill battle that you face as college students?
I think it's mostly about people just knowing what's going on. Like, you have a lot of people who are ignorant to how the system really is and where the root of the problem is. And you have people who don't really care to look for that knowledge or don't really care to do or say anything about it. So I think the first step is to, like, mobilize more people and get organized. Because that town hall meeting, it was in, like, one of our smaller rooms. That should have been in the Grand Colony Ballroom with, like, half the campus
during
there.
The middle of the day, during smack dab in the
right.
middle of the day where people
everybody
that are working can go.
Should have gone, yeah.
Yeah, not at 7 o'clock at night, but at, like, 1 o'clock, 12 noon, right in the middle of the day,
mm-hmm.
yeah. You're right. Yeah.
I think what I think is, like, the biggest thing that needs to be worked on is a lot of times you tell people what you know, and then there's this sort of, like, individualism of, like, well, I'm busy, I can't come out to this, like, this doesn't concern me, and we need to work on, and, like, this is something that, like, we all need to work on the way we're shaping it, because it clearly does affect all of us, but I don't think all of us realize that it affects us, if that makes sense. So talking to people and making them realize, like, this isn't about just Freddie Gray, this is about you're next, like, you have to do something, you know? So that's what I think it is.
And, because you could be black and wearing a three-piece suit, and the same stuff could happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
It has happened, and it's funny.
Any minority, really, too.
Yeah, and it's funny when you know, and I say that, like, loosely, not really funny, but it's interesting when you hear people say, well, you know, if we just dress, you know, if you just dress better, you know, whatever that means. You're going to take, you know, the eyes of racist scrutiny off of you. And that's really not historically, that's kind of inaccurate. If you look at some of the old pictures, if you type in lynching, a lot of those people were lynched wearing suits. Women wearing like, dresses coming down to their ankles. And the women are hanging there, you know, off of a bridge or off of a tree. The men are wearing suits. They're not, a lot of them are not raggedy, you know, dressed, you know, and so, not much has changed. Not much has changed, you know, 100 years later, you know, 80, 90 years later. Not much has changed. It's still very much the same. That's just an excuse. And you hear, like, these racist scumbags like Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, you know, talking about that, like, trying to deflect the attention to saying, oh, well, you know, it's saying that it's because there's, you know, 72% of black households are headed by a single black woman, and it's not that these are issues, but it's apples and oranges. That has nothing to do with. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? Like, you think the cops are checking and they're gonna ask? Oh wait, you come from a two family household first? You know, no. I mean, gee, like, what was Trayvon Martin's crime? What was that? You know what I'm saying? What was Ayanna Stanley Jones? Little black girl. Like, I mean, what? You know, it's. I mean, just repugnant. And that you have black folks that I see on Facebook and Twitter buying into this garbage, saying, oh yeah, you know, I never agree with Bill O'Reilly, but this one I gotta agree with him. You know, what are we doing with, you know, we're part of the problem with this whole police brutality because, you know, we don't have, you know, enough two family households. Like you really don't think they're gonna. They're, like, checking to see whether you come from a single family or a two family household. It just, you know, it's just repugnant. And it's kind of like Malcolm said, is that, you know, we a lot of us have left our minds in Africa. Like, we really have become delusional. And there's a lot of folks. I mean, we heard a conversation, you know, yesterday, some of us, where, you know, it's you hear black folks saying things that are reminiscent of what you would expect to hear, like, a racist, conservative white person saying. I mean, we just heard that yesterday.
I feel like if you're going to say that black people need to work on something, it would be like, we need to work on unity, like,
yeah.
being together as, like,
right.
one thing. Like, I feel like that's, like, the only
yeah.
argument you could ever say, like, us just being, like, if we're going to protest, we all
together,
need to protest
yeah.
together. Like,
together.
That's, like, the only argument you can have, really,
together.
About what we need to improve on, because everybody needs to improve on something in their life, but
yeah.
you just can't be, like, that's the reason why all of this is happening.
And you know what's interesting is that when you say those kind of things, those same racist, white hypocrites, you know, disingenuous, racist, like, scumbags, and that's, the nicest thing I can say about those types that would say this stuff, is that they will say all the stuff, like, you know, blaming, and it's just red herrings. It's smoke and mirrors. They're just doing it to distract because they don't care. Like, they don't care if we're gunned down in the streets, but they hate it when we have the temerity to actually protest and call it what it is. Call it out on, out on institutional racism and white supremacy. That's what it is. America's unjust. They hate when we call it out on that, because the proof is in the pudding. Whenever, whenever we unify, they hate that. So they would talk about, oh, you guys just need to, to build up your communities better, or you need to such and such. When we come together, whether it's the Bloods and the Crips coming together in unity, oh, they're petrified. Hate that. We'll do everything to try to break that up, even sending informants in to break that up. When we unify, oh, okay, fine. Let's just start. We're going to start taking our dollars and actually investing them in Africa, in textiles over there, fair trade, put our money into fair trade, practices in Africa, and utilizing those textiles and bringing them back here and building up, starting an apparel company or this, that, and the other. They don't want that kind of two-way partnership between ourselves and Africa, or a two-way partnership between ourselves and folks in Latin America. You know, they don't want that, and they certainly don't want us jumping boundaries from one culture to another culture, seeing Africans link up with Latin Americans, as we saw Hugo Chavez, linking up with Gaddafi before they died, working on, putting the steps in place to try to work on a partnership there that they saw as a threat. The same way they see the BRICS as a threat, Brazil, Russia, even though Russia is a predominantly white nation, it's also under the scrutiny of U.S. imperialism. But Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, they're petrified about that new economic bloc, petrified on it. So you're right. That's what we need to work on, is unity, and then solidarity with other oppressed people of this world. You know what I'm saying? Unity and solidarity with under the guise of internationalism and so forth, giving a damn about oppressed people throughout the world. No matter where they are, that is what they are petrified. But we, as you said, Taylor, we got to work on that, because that kind of unity also means that okay, you MFers, you got us going, fine. Okay, we'll capitulate. Yeah, you're right. We need to. So what we want is you to get out of our community and our school system with your little charter school, and we're gonna build up our own schools. All right, we're gonna build up at least one independent black school per community. We're going to do that. Nah, they don't want that. But those are the kind of things we need. We need black lawyers to give up an hour or two a month of their services to say, okay, if something goes down, we need to have a hotline. You know what I'm saying? That folks can get on the phone, and they can get on the phone with a black lawyer, and we have a lot of black lawyers in our community. We need to have black nurses and black doctors give up just an hour or two a month of their time. Because if you have 100 black doctors in one city, you multiply an hour or two times 100,
imagine the amount of hours that can be put into a, like an independent like clinic just for basic stuff. Coming in, someone who comes from the flu or this, that, and the other, they don't have the means. I mean, revisiting what the Black Panthers were doing. So, somebody else had something to say. With that being said, I want to go to not our final break, but the next break will be the end of the show. But I want to take a quick break right now with another song that's quite frankly very appropriate. This is KRS-One, Sound of the Police.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. Stand clear, stand man atop. You can't stand where I stand, you can't walk where I walk. Watch out, we run New York. Policeman come, we bust them out the park. I know this for a fact, you don't like how I act.
KRS-One's Sound of Police, And, you know, that's the kind of hip-hop we need to be supporting. That is the kind of hip-hop, because that song may have been back in the 90s, early 90s, but there are musicians and artists right now within the world of hip-hop music and the culture of hip-hop who are putting out social commentary that speak on a range of social issues, including police brutality. And let's call it for what it is, police terror, because these police are terrorizing our communities the same way, you know, in a similar way, I should say, that folks in Afghanistan and Pakistan are being terrorized by the threat of drones hovering over their communities and not knowing when these drones may strike or double tap, you know, as they do. You know, black communities, when they see police cars patrolling through, they don't know when these police might jump out and do those jump outs, the stop and frisk, and as we know, racial profiling can quickly turn south and go from being a simple racist jump out to being a much more complex, simple racist police brutality where someone loses their life. And so, you know, that to me, that's also a form of terror. So we got to support that kind of music that raises the spectrum of consciousness, that doesn't destroy us psychologically. And listen, yes, there's culpability on those black artists who are putting out that music out. But damn it, if you're listening right now and you're fed up, why don't you go to the Facebook page or the Twitter account, and why don't you start to just have a massive Twitter campaign to these artists and start telling them and galvanizing, getting folks that are your Facebook friends, like, yo, let's go to Lil Wayne's Facebook page, tell them, yo, we ain't going to support you, you're acting like a modern-day slave, everyone putting out tens of thousands and thousands and thousands of stuff hitting at him, but that's one layer. So who are the drug dealers? Who are the psychological drug dealers that deal that stuff, that make that stuff profitable? So, yeah, we have a responsibility to deal with those artists in our community that are putting out psychologically nefarious music. But keep in mind, they are made profitable by rich white media executives that make that music profitable, that are hell-bent on making sure music like that song that you just heard just now, making sure that kind of music is not ever made profitable or popular again. So we got to make that shit popular. All right, you know about the artists. We play it, you know, week in, week. We've had discussions. Damn, I mean, over a year ago, we had a show that was just dedicated to underground hip-hop artists, and we just played socially engaging, you know, politically progressive song after politically progressive song for a complete hour and 30 minutes. And you go to Your World News, we have a whole page dedicated to those artists. Go there and start to spread it. You know, support these artists, you know, because they're not going to. Anybody have any somewhat, you know, closing comments as we start to come to a close? And I would, if you're a student activist, and I would encourage you to put out the different stuff that you're doing right now that without a doubt is part of the solution. All right, it's not a panacea, but it is part of a cocktail of different holistic, you know, healthy pills, that socially healthy pills that we can take comprehensively to improve, you know, our conditions. And I might start with anybody who wants to take a stab at it first. Christine?
My final remarks on what we talked about today. I don't want us to be having this conversation again when it's the next guy. I feel really, really strongly that we don't need to just be worried about, are these six officers going to be found guilty? We need to be more worried about, how do we fix the system so that it's not a question, so that this doesn't happen again, so that people don't feel like they can beat up black men and women and not be found accountable. So that's my takeaway from that. And while we're here, I'm going to plug Justice for Juniors. Maymuna and I do work in a juvenile detention center because a whole other part of the issue we're talking about with police brutality and with police targeting black communities is that I guess just that it's profitable for them, and we need to do something to stop that, and we need to help these kids to turn their lives around so that, you know, they're not just another number in the system. So if you want to help us out with that, if you have any questions about that, if you want to volunteer, anything like that, email us at justice4, and it's the number 4, juniors@gmail.com.
Anybody else? Who's next? Newbie?
I go ahead. Again, my name is Jesse Jimenez. I'm the Vice President for Political Latinx United for Movement and Action Society. We do a number of things. We don't only advocate for the Latino community on campus or in the surrounding campus. We advocate for all marginalized communities. And as of right now, we've been working very diligently to help out the protesters in Baltimore. Right now, we're collecting water and food to take over to the protesters in Baltimore. We have a bunch of places located on campus here in the Edinburgh Cultural Center, which is where we're at right now. And also in front of one of the South Campus stores. So we're just collecting food right now. We're also working with NAACP, Asian American Student Union. SLAP is also helping out. So it's not only Plumas, it's a number of organizations that are helping out with this collective effort, just for juniors as well as helping us out. So that's something I'm really happy to see. It's really encouraging to see all of these different advocacy organizations come together to help out the people of Baltimore. Aside from that, I also want to mention the Muslim Student Association, who I've recently been getting kind of close to, thanks to Dr. Solomon. They're also going through a lot right now. Before everything happened in Baltimore, they protested against the viewing of American Sniper here at the University of Maryland. They ended up having that viewing pulled. And that drew a lot of media coverage, or local media coverage, and they've been receiving a lot of death threats and all kinds of crazy stuff over it. So now we're trying to start standing in solidarity with them. So me as a Plumas representative, I'm working with them to come up with some type of action because the Democrats and the Republicans here at the University of Maryland have actually come together to schedule another viewing for the film American Sniper.
Isn't that interesting? Democrats,
yeah,
Republicans,
exactly.
Coming together.
Yeah,
that's the one thing they came together.
Yeah, it's
supposed
to recently because
all the racial
stuff that have been going on this campus specifically all year, and the one thing they unite on is to screen the view of the American Sniper film after the Muslim Student Association had it pulled. So now we're working together with the Muslim Student Association to, you know, come up with some actions and make sure that their voices are heard, because, you know, Muslims are so often demonized here in the United States. And you see it now. You see it on this campus. They've been receiving death threats because they don't want a film that's anti-Muslim, that's clearly anti-Muslim, to be screened. And now when they successfully had it pulled, now you see the Democrats and the Republicans uniting just to take a screen. So yeah, I just wanted to, send out that quick drop and let people know what's going on here. Not only with everything that's going on in Baltimore, but, you know, we have the Muslim Student Association receiving death threats, and we're working together to make sure that they're still empowered, their voices are heard. So that's just my quick drop.
More importantly, making sure that they have a safe place to get an education, making sure that they feel safe in a place where they're coming to receive an education. Like, that's basic.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. And it's sad because I know one Muslim student here that she's very active, and she does not walk anywhere on campus by herself, especially at night. She always has to have somebody with her because she does not feel safe. People will like say things to her, they'll, you know, tease her or whatever. And just for her being so active, she feels like she's a target. You're already a target being a Muslim anywhere in the United States, but her being such a strong a strong advocate, like, she feels like she's constantly targeted. So that's just completely unacceptable. You should never feel unsafe at a university or at school, but, you know, that's just the reality of here in the United States.
All right. I don't know, Maimouna, you are Muslim and you're also in the MSA.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
I haven't watched the movie yet, so I can't comment on that, but yeah, I do know we do have a group me for people who don't want to walk alone, because a lot of them, after the whole Facebook messaging thing, and like there was actually a guy on Route 1 with like a poster saying, I don't know, but he was throwing diapers at people, actually. So now there's a group me that if you're walking to or from somewhere and you want to be accompanied by someone else, that
I don't think that's okay. People should not feel that way on a college campus. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't agree more. And I would just, you know, tell folks, like, when we continue to deal with these issues, those of us that are living within these manufactured borders called the United States, it's important for us to remain cognizant and dare I say, give a damn about issues of oppressed people outside of this country. So give a damn about, you know, take some time and start to, you know, do your study quest and learn about different issues throughout the world and be very, very meticulous about who you get your information from, because you know, some of these media, you know, outlets, to borrow again from Malcolm, and, you know, to paraphrase what he said, is that, you know, newspapers, you know, will have you, you know, loving the oppressor and hating the oppressed, you know, so you have to be careful about who you're, you know, getting information from, because some will portray those that are oppressed as you know, as terrorists or rebels, and I say this about, like, the folks in, like, for instance, folks in Chiapas, you know, in Mexico, and what they're, you know, they're struggling for self-determination, have been struggling for a long time for self-destruction, I mean, for self-determination, and have been facing state-sponsored, terrorism, you know, left and right. And I say that all to say that when we start to do that, we gain an appreciation of what's going on in the world, and we can start to internationalize and link up with folks across waters, across different borders, because we have to internationalize our issues as well. We have to internationalize. We have to internationalize the what's going on right now. I was so happy that, for instance, Mike Brown's family went to, I believe it was like Switzerland. They went to Switzerland, and, you know, they testified in front of somebody, you know, I forgot what body it was, you know, and pardon me for not remembering, but they went over there to talk about what had happened to their son and police brutality. And we have to use these, use the internet as an opportunity to do that, to link up and say, listen, I'm sorry to hear about the fact that a lot of black people are being killed in police custody in London, which is the case. You know, we have this issue here, and they can help spread issues that we're facing the same way we can help them spread, you know, consciousness here in the U.S. in terms of what their issues are. We cannot remain isolated. The U.S. government and U.S. society does a great job of putting people, pigeonholing people that are Americans to make them, you know, without even knowing it, to make them isolated, so that you don't know that much of the world has free education. You know, economies that are much smaller than the U.S.'s, they have free education. They have free health care. And meanwhile, since you don't know that, you're running around, you know, parroting what Democrats and Republicans saying that it would be terrible to have, you know, free education or free health care. That would hurt the free market. Well, fuck the free market if it's preventing you and your family from having free quality health care like much of the rest of the world has. And certainly the rest of all the industrialized countries except for the United States has a social contract, health social contract for its citizens. We don't have anything like that because to be isolated and not internationalized. We got to become internationalized. We got to spread it. Malcolm was talking about it. We got to use opportunities to go to the United Nations. And I'll say this, less than a year ago, Your World News, we went and we drafted a letter. And we went to change.org, and it's still there. Go to Your World News, and you can find it there. Please put your signature there. And we sent it. So every time that this letter, someone signs this letter, it goes to the Deputy Secretary General for Human Affairs at the United Nations. And just to bring attention, and within it we said that black people in this country need to have some type of intervention. There needs to be some kind of mass resolution, because we continue to be, if 313 black people killed in one calendar year by the police does not merit some kind of resolution condemning the United States from this so-called international body, the United Nations, then you guys are nothing but frauds and footstools of the West. So we gotta keep doing that kind of stuff and be creative about it, to broaden it, to embarrass the hell out of this government, to, you know, because they're
not going to do it altruistically. They're not going to do it because, oh, these poor blacks and Latinos are dying in the streets. Nah, they've been down in the streets for generations. They're not going to do it altruistically. They're going to do it because their bottom line is hurt, and they're going to do it because out of fear of perhaps embarrassment. But right now, they don't fear embarrassment because we run around supporting all the nefarious things that they do. But people within our society that shouldn't be doing that are supporting that. So on that note, you have been listening to the place where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive, Your World News. We don't believe that, we unequivocally will say yes, we are biased, all right? we are biased, all right? So is it better, Christine, for us to come out and say that, yeah, we're biased towards social justice and to tell the truth, or to be like Fox News and say we're fair and balanced, which is their catch slogan, fair and balanced. There couldn't be nothing fair or balanced about their portrayals about the news, you damn hypocrites, you scumbags. And anytime you want to call in Hannity or Bill O'Reilly, gladly, we will debate you. Matter of fact, you know, we have a bunch of college students that will gladly debate you on any of those issues. They don't expect a phone call because they only deal with lies and having people on their shows that they can cut off before they, you know, cut off as soon as they start making valid points. So with that being said, I'm going to take you out with the main source, just a friendly game of baseball.
Oh, shit, another young brother hit. I better go over my man's crib and get the pump. Cause to the cops, shooting brothers is like playing baseball, and they're never in a slump. I guess when they shoot up a crew, it's a grand slam, and when it's one, it's a home run. But I'ma be ready with a wild pitch. My finger got a bad twitch, plus I wanna switch sides and step up to the batter's box. Fuck red and white, I got on black socks. But let them shoot a person from the White Sox. What's the call? Foul ball. Babe Ruth would've made a good cop, but he didn't. Instead, he was a bigot. Dig it. My life is valuable, and I protect it like a gem. Instead of cops shooting me, I'm going out shooting them. And let them cough up blood like phlegm. It's grim, but that is my antonym. And legally, they can't take a fall. Yo, check it out. It's just a friendly game of baseball. RBI, real bad injury, but don't get happy, you're in jail for a century. Just as bad as being shot in the groin, to see who'll shoot ya, they'll flip a coin, and watch it run for the stretch. But you don't know the man is at home waiting to make the catch. So the outfield, your guns, you're down, you're out, off to the dugout, underground. I know a cop that's savage, his pockets stay green like cabbage, cause he has a good batting average. No questions, just pulls out the flamer, and his excuses get lamer. Once the brother tried to take a lead, but they shot him in his face, saying he was trying to steal a base. And people watch the news for coverage on the game, and got the nerve to complain. They need to get themselves a front row seat, or save the baseline for a beat. Cause television just ain't designed for precision, y'all. It's just a friendly game of baseball. The brother went, the umpires or the government. I guess they kicked him out the game and replaced him with a pinch hitter. And the scammy was a quitter. So the cops usually tournament. When am I was saying, you can't let the umpires hear you speaking battle like the other kids, you won't be playing. Cause they'll beat you till your ass drop. A walking gun with a shell in his hand is their mascot. When you run around, let it be noticed, step lightly. The bases are loaded, my man got out from three strikes in the skull, but the knife he was carrying was dull. Instead of innings, we have endings. What a fine way to win things, and hot dog vendors have fun selling you the cat, rat, and dog on a bun. And when you ask what is all of this called, it's just a friendly game of baseball.
You low life, you take that, and that, and that. I'm here to protect and serve, and that's exactly what I'm gonna do.